Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn. Hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
I eat diabetic since I was 13. I grew up plant-based, went in and out of it, but always liked meat. Last August, I started practicing carnivore, but it wasn't until March, right when I started getting in contact with you. When I was diagnosed, I was 13. Nobody really ever heard of a 13-year-old getting type 2 diabetes. I've lost 30 pounds since March, but what's even better is the mental health aspect. When I eat fatty meat, the anxiety tends to like go away. I tend to do more productive things. My new girlfriend has been great because she's given me people to talk to and eat this way. Meaning carnivore is my new girlfriend. That's what I'm referring to.
And, right. That crazy ex was Sugar.
Yeah.
She's and, crazy too.
You know, sometimes I call Sugar up and then when she answers, I just hang up the phone. When you do the carbs, the hunger signals are different. You're hangry. You're like, I gotta eat. I was in a wheelchair until March because of it. I can't really live on my own. It's tough because of it. I saw what Sugar was doing to me. You don't know how bad you are in a bad place until you leave that place.
Quick interruption. Did you know we have an incredible membership site for you called healinghumanity.life? We have a special offer going on right now. Learn more at the link in the description. We have courses. We have expert Q&As with the good doctors. We even have a Healing Humanity Heroes Zoom call once a week, highlighting real heroes that will inspire you on a path to healing. The community is wonderful. We're going to be implementing a buddy system so you can be held accountable, recipes, all sorts of great stuff to help you on a path to healing. Learn more at the link in the description below.
So I diabetic since I was 13 and I grew up plant-based and I kind of went in and out of plant-based and I really struggled with it, but I've always liked meat. And I believe last year around August is when I really started practicing carnivore, but it wasn't until March, right when I started getting in contact with you and that really like got me really motivated because I felt a sense of community, you know, with somebody else that somebody else that I can talk to that's doing this, that I really started eating this way. And I've noticed tremendous benefits and I've lost 30 pounds since March. But I think what's even better than that is the mental health aspect, because I don't deal with is I find that when I eat fatty meat, the anxiety tends to like go away. And I tend to do more productive things. I'm literally in pre-production for a short that I want to shoot that I wrote.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Has it been a long time since you've taken on anything like that?
Yeah. It's been a very long time. I would say since 2010, 2011, since I've directed anything.
And your other big issue, we talked about this a little bit before. If people want to hear Dave's entire story, I did an interview with Dave on my channel, and Dave has an awesome channel of his own. He just interviewed me over there, Flesh and Fuel. So I'll have a link in the description below, and I encourage everyone, go support Dave, check him out, subscribe to his channel. It's really awesome what you're doing over there. You're doing all sorts of cool stuff. I was watching some of your older videos too, where you do a lot of film movie stuff, which I'm totally into, sitting in the basement of a movie theater right now sort of thing. But I remember, Dave, last time we were talking, one of your big issues was also type 2 diabetes. Can you talk about that a little bit and what's changed for you there?
Yeah. So it's been weird because when I was diagnosed, I was 13, and nobody really ever heard of a 13-year-old getting type 2 diabetes. So I was automatically diagnosed as type 1 juvenile diabetes. And the human body is so complex that even to this day, they have to do so many different kinds of tests to find out what I am. But based on what I've been doing and the results that I've gotten, I believe I'm type 2. It's been the bane of my existence. I mean, I'm legally blind because of it. I'm on dialysis because of it. I was in a wheelchair up until about March because of it. I can't really live on my own, or I can, but I can't. It's tough to live on my own because of it. I mean, it's literally been the worst thing in the world. But I mean, I think the benefits of it is that it opened me up to different and healthier ways of eating. So that's the benefit of I would say the silver lining there.
Is that why you started carnivore? Was that like your big reason?
My big why was diabetes, weight loss, because I like meat. I used to feel guilty eating it. Then I found out that it's like the best thing for you to eat. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. And no question. Yeah. I absolutely love this. And I saw what sugar was doing to me, and I didn't see it. It wasn't completely evident until I went back to the sugar, you know? So before, you don't know how bad you are when you're in a bad place until you leave that bad place.
Yeah. And so true. Mm-hmm. Someone, I stole this from someone, Dave. I wish I remember who it was, but I say it over and over again. You can't see the fog while you're in the fog. It's only once you get out of it, you're like, whoa, man, I knew it was kind of bad, but I didn't realize it was that. It's like, speaking of movies, it's like The Matrix, right? You're in there. It all seems really real until you disconnect, and then you're like, whoa, this is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. And since then, I've been having like a it's been like a really weird breakup, I would say, with sugar.
Yeah.
Almost like a relationship, really.
Right. Because,
you know, you get tempted, and then I think my new girlfriend has been really great to me because she's given me people to talk to and other people that eat this way. Meaning carnivore is my new girlfriend. That's what I'm referring to.
And, right. That crazy ex was sugar.
Yeah.
She's crazy too.
And, you know, sometimes I call sugar up, and then when she answers, I just hang up the phone.
Oh man, that's awesome. That's a good analogy right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta stay away from that. You gotta stay away from that crazy sugar.
I do now, man. I'm much better, man. And especially getting my mom on board to be an advocate, or to be what's not advocate, hold me accountable, like,
right,
you know. I'm her child, I'm her baby, so if I ask for anything, you know, food related, she's gonna give it to me, and then it ends up not working well. I'm like, hey mom, you know, can you get me some lemonade? And me knowing I'm not supposed to be asking for it, I'm just like, ah. And then she used to also ask me, hey, do you want some lemonade? And I'm like, come on. You know, and I struggle with lemonade. I'm like, okay, I can't right? do this anymore. I have to let it go. I have to surrender this. And it's almost like an object lesson for, I don't know if you're religious or not, but for Christianity, you know, having to like surrender something for a better cause.
Yeah.
And so it's been like that, and I'm seeing the benefits. I mean, as much is I love it. And there are, and I think what helps with the cravings is making sure that I eat enough and starting to learn the new hunger signals.
Right.
Because when you do the carbs, the hunger signals are definitely different. You're hangry. You're just like, oh man, I gotta eat. I gotta eat. And then you're stuffed and you're just like, oh my God. You know that the itis where you're just exhausted. And you just want to sleep. And I mean, all of that, it's just you're just shoved with poison. But you know, when you're stuffed with meat, like I'm like working or doing writing screenplays or like recording content for YouTube. So, I mean, this way of eating outweighs any other way of eating. And I try to plant seeds, but not the way I used to plant seeds. So I tend to be somebody who likes a debate, and a lot of times it doesn't serve a purpose because some people don't like to debate and they'll get pissed off and not even consider what you're talking about just to spite you. So
right.
I've learned to just plant seeds and kind of go wherever the conversation leads. You know,
some people,
I hear people say, oh yeah, I don't even think I can eat meat anymore. I'm like, and I don't even like try to refute what they say. I'm like, hey, I just put that out there. I know that I said something that you're not used to hearing and you might hear it a few more times and one day might go back, listen to it. And that's kind of what happened to me.
Yeah.
Somebody mentioned it and I'm like, hell nah. With no vegetables? Are you kidding me? And yeah. And then it took a few more times. And then I finally went and looked at it and I'm like, man, I wish I'd known about this back when I was doing raw foods, but who's to say that I would have even like gave this the light of day.
Right. Mm-hmm. Man, it's crazy, like, with the sugar thing, too, because for me, I'll be honest with you, I am scared. Like, I actually had a nightmare that someone threw a birthday cake at me and a little piece of it came in slow motion. A little piece of the frosting was in slow motion coming towards me. I'm like, no! Like, I'm so scared of it because my depression and anxiety was so bad.
Yeah.
So bad. Yeah. I've showed this before, but I tried all of these pills and medication. I was trying everything. And I really believe a big part of it was the sugar and eating that. And if I get a little sugar, even if it's like an apple or whatever, it's those cravings come back. And then I want more and more and more. And it seems
and then
like
that emotional.
Yep. And it's like, it's not like a one day thing. In my head, I'm like, oh, I'll have one cheat day. And then it turns into a couple days, into a week, into a month. And it's completely derailed. Yeah. So, but for you, it's like, if you have that lemonade or sugar again, do you worry like your vision or back in the wheelchair or things like that?
So the last time I had something sweet, because I don't count milk, because even though it's like a carb or whatever, I don't do it as often as I don't do cheese or milk as often as I used to, just as much as I love it because it makes me gain weight. But the last time I had something, it was my friend's birthday. She had her 40th and she had a potluck and they had all kinds of, luckily they had meat there. I didn't think they were going to have meat there, but they had meat there. And she had these little cupcakes. Oh my God. And I made a doggy bag. I was like, I made an excuse and said, I'm gonna give these to my mom and my cousin and my aunt, you know, people at home. And which that was the plan.
It was a nice thought.
You know, that was the plan. And I came home and I think I ate a slice of the whatever cake I had. I ate that, and it was. I don't want to cuss on your podcast, but dude, it was so insanely good. Or that it was. Yeah, I don't even know how to. It was bad. It was bad that I did that. But I don't even know how to describe it. But like. I said, all right, I ate this. I was like, okay, I'm good. And then the next day, I'm like, you don't want to waste a cake, man. Just like, right? You know, just eat the rest of them. I had planned to like bolus up a bunch of insulin and just, I mean, dive into that plate. Dude, my mom took the plate because I told her it was for her. And she came down and it wasn't, she didn't do it because she knew I was going to eat it. She took it because she was like, well, my son's not going to eat this because it's cake. And she took it. And I'm so thankful she did. And it was such a weird amalgamation of emotions. I was happy that she took it, but upset because I really wanted the cake, you know, like,
right.
It was crazy. And I was like, you know what, let me just chill out. But dude, what's really been helping me is anytime I get those sweet cravings, I do the carnivore ice cream. Oh my God. That stuff is, cause I have an ice cream maker and yeah, it is phenomenal. I'll down an entire pint and won't even feel guilty because it, I mean, no sugar at all. I think the only thing I have in there is the heavy cream, the eggs yolk, and the vanilla extract, which I think that's probably the only thing that has sugar in it, but it doesn't trigger anything. So,
yeah, I've heard a lot of people, I think Dr. Kilt's ice cream, he talks about that a lot. I haven't tried that yet. But man, that's right. A lot better. That's a lot better than the cake. The other thing I've found for cravings, if I ever get any, I usually find that it's when I'm not eating enough fat. Like if I eat some bacon or something, those cravings go away. But if I just sit there and linger in them, then they get worse and worse. But it's usually when I'm not eating enough.
Dude, I guess it was a hack that I discovered yesterday because I went in, I did the priming 101 at Bella's group. And I find that if I eat like a pound of ground beef with you know, this much cold butter, my blood sugars is good. I mean, everything is good. I'm not as thirsty either when I eat like a high fat meal. And I find that that's really the secret. That's the saving grace, because if I do like a bunch of protein, I'm like drinking so much water and it messes me up. But if I do like these short ribs are like hella fat. So when I eat those, I'm like, okay, this is what I need to do is eat more of the fat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to do. They're just so damn expensive. Those carnivore bars.
Yeah.
Have you had any of those?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to see if I can try to make my own, because those are incredible, man. You know, like, because sometimes I don't want to cook, and you know, I just get pop two of those. You know, that'll help with like whatever, you know.
Yep, great for an emergency craving or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And so
the other thing that's helped me later in my carnivore journey, and this requires cooking, but brisket. And it's kind of a pain, but I'll smoke up like a big brisket, but then I have it like for a week or a couple days in the fridge. Mm. And man, the fat content in brisket, it's just like you were saying, like eating the ground beef with the cold butter. Like I eat that, I'm not drinking anything. I'm not thinking about food at all. I just feel great when I'm eating that, probably because of the fat content.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm glad you brought that up, because we were talking about the topic of different kinds of meats and exotic meats.
Yeah.
And so I've not done brisket that much, and I need to, and I'm not that experienced with meats. So sometimes huge cuts, they intimidate me.
Right.
So I remember the first time I bought a brisket or a chuck roast, I think it was, this big chunk. I had no idea what, like how to eat it. And so I put it in the oven and cut away at it. It was like trying to cut into rubber, like, or eat rubber. I had no idea what I was doing.
And have you done any slow cooker? Like slow cooker?
I have a slow cooker. That's the funny thing. And I put it in the slow cooker after the fact. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to, I think I'll crust the brisket or whatever large piece of meat, and then put it in the slow cooker. So,
yeah, the slow cooker has been a game changer for me too. Big like chuck roasts and things like that; those are really good. You got to plan though. I'm bad at doing that, but I've been getting better. Where I'll do it like the night before. I'll put like a big roast or something in the slow cooker, let it go all night. Then you wake up in the morning and you can smell it. And the other thing with that, if you slow cook it, the broth that you get, pour some water in there with it.
God, it's so
good.
Delicious. Yeah.
It's so good for you too.
It is.
It's like one of the best things for you. One of the things that we've been doing, like most grocery stores, you can get like chunks of meat. Like they just say beef stew meat or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll get those. That's been like my family's go-to for months now. Almost every Monday, I put that in the slow cooker, just chunks of meat with some water, a stick of butter, and some salt. Let it go all night, and the next day you got broth, and you got this just tender beef stew. And I'll usually add a little bit of cold butter on it like you do with the ground beef, and that is a really, really good one.
It adds such a dynamic flavor palette to it when you add the cold butter. There's something about it because that brisket is so hot and wet, and then you get that cold butter.
Yep.
Yeah, it is a great pairing, absolutely.
And you mentioned Bella. I got to shout out Bella, Steak and Butter Gang. She's awesome. Bella. And
yeah, she is.
Did a video on having cold butter versus melted butter. And you would think, like I would have thought, what's the difference? It's butter's butter. You melt it or it's cold. But it makes a difference. And some people have problems when you melt the butter. Like they'll end up in the bathroom or it'll give them stomach issues or things like that. But I learned that from Bella on a video and I've been doing it ever since. Like I'll make ground beef and it's cold butter next to it. It's so good. Like the hot meat and the cold butter kind of thing.
Yeah. The only time I use that I'll even ingest warm butter or hot butter is when I brown it after cooking a steak.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll have a bowl of brown butter that I dip the steak in. I'll do that.
Yep.
Stuff. But I mean, other than that, I stick to cold butter. And it sucks because now my mother is overseas. She won't get back till the 29th. And I'm running low on butter. And so I'm just like, I'm gonna see if I can get somebody to get me some butter because I mean I have tallow. But you know, butter's always good to have.
Yep.
Oh my goodness, yeah, it is. I can't even. Yeah, I love it.
What are some other things we were talking about this briefly before? But what are some other things you've been eating, or anything weird, unusual, or anything that's been really good?
So I don't even know if I told you that I tried quail.
No.
Yeah, it is. It is pointless to eat quail. It is.
Is it? I never had it.
They're like the size of pigeons. They're excessively bony, and it's not. And the meat doesn't really taste good. I tried duck wings. To be fair, I don't know how to cook duck wings. I don't know if there's a different way of cooking duck wings, but goat. I like goat, but you have to get the right kind of goat. I had rabbit sausage, which I wasn't too crazy about.
You're trying everything.
Yeah, you know what? Because there's a shop here in Atlanta called Mandamoon. It's a Vietnamese restaurant, and they have all kinds of meat. They got like cow tongue, oxtail. Well, oxtail is not, that's not really exotic meat, but like at least to me, because I grew up seeing people eat oxtail and stuff. But oxtail. Have you ever had oxtail?
No,
dude. You talking about like fatty? It is probably some of the fattiest meat. Put that in the slow cooker with some. You don't use a lot of spices, right? Do you use garlic or onion powder or paprika?
No.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, even salt, water, and butter. That's perfect right there, dude. I mean, yeah, so oxtail is hitting, and but like, yeah, I'll do that. I want to try duck eggs. And when things get, I think one day I might try an ostrich egg.
Nice.
Yeah, that'll be one hell of a meal, man.
I've had a couple people suggest that I want to try all these things. I don't know. I get in a rhythm and I don't really try other things, but I've never had duck eggs and I heard they're good. And the ostrich eggs, really? Someone told me too, because my whole family's doing carnivore. So when we make like a big breakfast, it's like sometimes 2-3 dozen eggs we're cooking up. I'm like, ostrich egg right in the middle there. That cover most of it. But
really, dude, I was talking to Todd and he said he'll do like 55 egg yolks a day.
So Todd Bachner's Carnivore Cure, he was telling me that too. Well, when he was doing priming, and he was saying like he was just putting the muscle on, like he wasn't even trying, just eating all those eggs. It's like almost it's like steroids or something.
Steroids, yeah.
You look back at the old bodybuilders like Arnold, that's all he used to eat. Now he's doing more vegan plant based stuff, but back in the day when he was growing all that muscle, it was steak and eggs every single day, every single meal.
You remember Pumping Iron, right?
Yeah.
Eating globs of meat, and they weren't really doing a lot of carbs, maybe a little carbs here and there,
right?
But I don't know if he went back to eating meat. I hope he did, but yeah, I mean, yeah, Arnold, yeah, that they were eating like exorbitant amount of you talking about they were priming,
yeah,
they were legitimately priming, man. I you said you still haven't done it yet, right?
I haven't yet, although I'm slowly working towards it. As of about a week ago, so my wife and I, we got triplets plus one. And my triplets, they're all doing carnivore with me now. And they started going to the gym like a week ago. And I'm like, man, I'm so busy. I don't have time. And then I'm like, there's yard work we could be doing. Why are we paying a gym to go lit? We could go cut firewood or something. But they convinced me to go like a week ago and I went and I feel really good on carnivore. I don't want to feel like I'm overhyping it, but after working out, I slept great at night. Like I felt even better.
Quick interruption. Thank you so much for watching. If you're interested in learning more about our documentary, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet, or supporting it, please visit donate.healinghumanity.movie. Our goal is to reach millions of people that are hopeless right now, and sharing the examples of real people over the course of 1 year that are undertaking a proper human diet to overcome obesity, type 2 diabetes, depression, anxiety, fertility issues. We couldn't do it without you. We thank you so much. We are also selling these shirts, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet. Every penny we get from those goes towards the documentary. And last, we have memberships. If you click the little join button, it's best to do it on desktop. Under any one of my YouTube videos, you can join and become a member. We have hundreds of members right now. We do members-only videos. We do members-only behind the scenes. You can email me as a member and I'll answer you. And every penny from that goes to support the documentary. And the last thing is we have these Redmond's portable salt shakers. These things are awesome. You can get the best salt. You can take it with you. We sell these on the website along with our water bottles and cutting boards, and every penny from all of those goes 100% towards supporting the documentary. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which is completely free. All of these links are in the description below. Thank you so much for your support. Now back to today's video.
So I went with them every day last week, and then I was thinking about what Todd said, like, man, I'm just putting on the muscle with these eggs. I love eggs, so over the last week, I've been ramping it up and eating more and more eggs every day. I was actually doing lion diet for like 60 days. And I think about 2 weeks ago, I kind of went off of that. But I don't know if I'm going to get up to as many as Todd did, but I'm definitely eating way more than an average human should eat or would eat. And I'm kind of doing it strategically, just like eat the eggs, go to the gym, get some muscle kind of thing.
Do you do them raw?
I have not tried that yet either. I'm not opposed to it though. I'll give it a try. I just haven't.
So I don't know how. Like I did them raw. It really tough because it's just slimy.
Yeah.
But you know what helps, dude, is you put the put them in there raw, and put heavy cream or milk in there.
Okay.
And it's like eating chunky ice cream,
right?
You know, so it's like, and that is the ultimate protein shake right there, dude. And don't even mix it, just eat it like that, just, you know, down it like that. And
was Todd doing some raw too with the number of eggs he was eating? I wonder how he's preparing all those.
He was eating them raw. That's why I mentioned it. Yeah, he said he would do 55 eggs raw. Like, wow. He would just drink them. Like, that would I think it's more of a mental thing because there's really no taste to raw eggs.
Right.
So it's more getting over that mental hump, and the mental hump is rough. And, you know, you and him, you guys have like access to like high quality eggs because those are from your own chickens, right?
Yes and no. It's so pathetic, Dave. Like, we have our own chickens and my wife lets them free range, which is great because they run around the yard and they eat all the bugs and insects and mosquitoes and ticks. So it's good, but then they just lay eggs anywhere. So anytime I want eggs, I got to go on an Easter egg hunt. Like, there's one under the tree. And then you find one. Like, I took the lawnmower out the other day and there was a whole bunch of them under the lawnmower. And then I'm like, are these like 6 months old? How long have they been sitting here for? You don't know. So we got to get organized. I told my wife, I'm like, we are the worst. Yeah. Wannabe farmers, homesteaders, whatever you call it. I'm like, we should just have them locked up in a run and have a place to put their eggs because this is ridiculous. We're all eating eggs every day, and I end up buying a bunch of them because I just can't get enough.
So the chickens, they don't. I would think that they would like strategically have a place to put them in, I guess where they sleep or whatever. But they don't do that.
They do for normal people, and we have like a coop and a little laying box. And if we lock them up at night, we'll usually get a couple, like a handful, but the majority are still around the yard throughout the day. And it's crazy where I find them. Like, I'll be on the complete other side of the yard. Like, oh, there's an egg under this tree. And there's like one over here. They're all over the yard. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and chickens need to talking to, man. That's just trifling.
Right? I know. It makes me mad too. Cause I'm like, why we have, we got three goats too. You mentioned eating goats before. Ours are pets. We've had them for like 9 years now or something. But man, if it ever comes down to it, if crap hits the fan or something and we're starving, I'm going to eat one of those goats.
Yeah, that's kind of the point of having them.
Yeah.
You know, because to me, owning livestock is true wealth.
Right.
Because you are completely self-sustainable at that point, pretty much.
I agree with you. My problem is my wife, and every animal we get turns into a pet. However, there's one good thing with it. So we have an Airbnb. Our house is like a duplex. It's like a two-family. So we have an Airbnb, and people will rent the Airbnb to stay on a homestead with chickens and goats. So the goats, it's kind of turned into like an attraction or like a petting zoo. And actually our goats, the guests that rent the Airbnb, they'll come and they'll let the goats out and the goats will follow them around our yard. They'll like go for a walk around the yard.
Yeah.
So it's turned into, I'm like, you guys are kind of earning your keep. So I'm going to keep you around. Otherwise this is a complete waste of time.
Yeah. It's tough, man. I remember being in Haiti and we drove up these mountains to my cousin's house, and right on the ledge I saw this little goat on top of a rock. Like, it looked like literally, and I don't know, they're just so funny, man. You know,
I know. But, yeah, they don't care. I mean, they're not, they have no fear.
They're pretty fearless.
I'll tell you a quick funny story. So I mentioned we have our Airbnb and it's above our garage, and you got to go up the steps and then you got to go into a little porch. And then there's a patio, a glass patio door. Well, about 2 years ago, we had a guest in the Airbnb, and they called my wife, and they're like, you got to get up here. Your goat got out, came up the steps, and your goat is banging its head on the glass patio door trying to get in the Airbnb. I thought that was hilarious. The guests were cool. They thought it was pretty funny. But
that's pretty funny, yeah.
I had another thing where I was doing a live stream once, just like you and I are doing now, at my house, and one of the girls left the door open and a goat walked by in the back. Like, I'm talking to someone and this was a work. This was a work conference call, and there's a goat walking behind me in the background. So they're very entertaining. I'll say
they are. You know, the ghosts that I think are really funny, the ones that faint.
Yeah. Yeah. I've watched, for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, Google fainting goats. It is hilarious.
Oh my God, dude. Those things are really funny, man.
Right.
And I it's almost worth it to get one just for that alone.
Yeah.
We have about maybe just under an acre and a half. And so I know my mother said she wants to get some chickens. I don't know if we have to be zoned for goats or not, right. But I know that.
If I give you some advice, definitely get the chickens. Maybe not the goats, but the chickens, I recommend to everyone, like, other than my issue, if you keep them with a place to put them away at night where they lay the eggs, then you're good. But the chickens are awesome. They're the hardest workers. It's entertaining too. You could just sit out there in a chair and watch them, and they're just working all day. They're eating the insects out of the grass, and they're just constantly, they're entertaining, they're working, and they're like very low maintenance. The goats are a nightmare, man. Oh my goodness.
Okay.
When we first got the goats, I spent so much money on fencing, and they would just break. They would spend all day just ramming into the fencing, breaking it, and then getting out or jumping over it. Yeah. We were like building higher and higher fencing, more like, I'm like, we're spending all this money just to keep these things contained. And then we'd have a guest come, and they would just open the gate and let them out anyway. But
yeah, they definitely get eaten up. Me spending all that damn money on fences.
Yeah.
You're going to be dinner for like the next few weeks. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy. Oh yeah. So I'm definitely going to do the chicken. I think one thing we were worried about a little bit is that we have a cat, but chickens are pretty tough.
Yeah. Especially, you'll probably be all right with the cat. When you get to chickens too, Dave, keep some eggs from the grocery store and then look at your eggs from your chicken. It is night and day difference. Really? The chicken from your own eggs, it'll be like this dark golden yolk color. From the store, it's usually like pale if you're lucky. It's barely even yellow anymore. And because your chickens will be eating insects and everything. When you get it from the grocery store, they're just feeding them grain and junk. Like the junk that you and I used to eat that got us sick, they're feeding that to the chickens. And the chickens get sick, and then they got to put antibiotics in it. And then the egg you get is not optimal. But just a natural chicken in your yard eating insects and mice or whatever it comes across. They eat mice? You can taste the difference and you can feel the difference. It's so much better for you.
They eat mice? Chickens eat mice?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, wow. That's okay. Yeah, definitely. That's useful. Yeah, because I know, well, we have one indoor cat, one outdoor cat. I know it's weird, but like the outdoor cat, his name is Shadow, and he holds it down. Like, you're talking about it. Like, we used to have four cats in total, one orange and three black, and he's the only one that survived. And I am convinced that he chased them away or killed them.
Mm.
Because
he's the alpha.
Yeah, he complete alpha. Like he does not play. Like, you would think that, you know, since we keep the food outside, you would think that there'd be a bunch of cats. I don't see any other cats in this neighborhood, like at all. Yeah, I mean, this Shadow's pretty tough, man. And what I think is hilarious, well, not really funny, but like, over the summer, he came back home and he was limping. And I'm just like, this dude is like a quiet warrior. He's out there because, you know, cats like murder things all the time. That's all they do is kill stuff. And so I'm just like, he's out there just murdering random animals and then coming home like he's all sweet and cool. But this dude, he's a menace, man.
So, that's so funny. We got a cat, Tiggs, and it was a wild cat. This was like 8 years ago. We were driving home, and this cat was running through the intersection as a kitten. And my girls and my wife, they're like, oh, my goodness, he's going to die. Dad, do something. So like a fool, I ran out there. I was able to catch it completely wild, like feral, untamed cat. We brought it home, and it took a while just to get it back in the house. But long story short, it's always been inside, outside cat. And it's like, it sounds like your cat Shadow. It is a warrior. Like, there'll be bunnies outside with their heads missing right by the front door. It'll just bring the carcass up to the door and just drop it off there. But here's the crazy thing. This cat drives me insane. It'll cry, like just meowing over and over again to go outside. We'll let it outside do its thing. And then every day, it's like 2:33 in the morning. It's scratching on the door. It's crying. It won't shut up to let it back in. So it wakes me up.
Yeah.
And so here's what happened. I went to film in, where did I film last? I just got back. Oh no, I was in Canada. I got back. No, when I was in Alaska filming Bill, I got back from filming Bill, and my girls found a cat by the side of the road. Another cat. That's another story. But they found this other cat, and our cat Tiggs that we had for 9 years disappeared. And well, my one daughter was like heartbroken, like, what? It's been 2 days and Tiggs is gone. 3 days went by, 4 days went by. And I'm not going to lie, I was like, I'm kind of happy. Like, I kind of like that cat. Like, every now and then it'd come up and purr, but it was driving me nuts. Like, every night, crying for years. Like, I got to get my sleep. 4 days went by. On the fifth day, the cat showed back up, came back home, and it was all skinny. And it was like, it was just like you said, Dave. I'm like, I wish I could have a camera on this cat.
No,
like, I have a feeling
he
traveled like 100 miles away or something. And found. I was joking to the girls. I'm like, yeah, I drove him out to Iowa and just dropped him off because I wanted to get some sleep at night, and he found his way home. I did not do that. I don't know what he did or where he went for 5 days. I wrote it off, though. On day three, I'm like, there's no way. He's never done that before. I'm like, there's no way he's coming back. Day five, he shows back up. And now he's doing it again every single 3 a.m. every morning, crying to get back in the house.
Oh man, I don't even know if you ever thought about putting those like doggy doors in there.
I got to do it, you know. And my buddy Bill in Alaska, who we're filming for a documentary, he's got a cat and he has that same setup. And he's like, dude, just put the door in. And I should have done it a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I got to just do it. I don't know. We live out in the woods, and I'm like, is that safe? Like, am I going to have like a raccoon or something? It's probably just fine. But I'm like, I got to do something. Well, put it up higher or something.
Yeah. I'm not a raccoon expert but I think they're pretty feral. I don't know if they'll walk in your house.
Right.
I think it's worth it. Especially man, those cats, and they don't give a damn about your sleep.
Nope.
They really don't, man. They're little a-holes, dude. But yeah,
I was gonna not to change the subject, but I wanted to ask you a little bit more. So I'm doing this movie, Healing Humanity. I love movies. You got experience doing movies. Now that you're doing Carnivore, you're getting energy. You're talking about doing more stuff. Can we talk about that a little bit? Like, what sort of stuff have you done in the past? What are you looking forward to doing in the future?
Yeah, so I got involved. The first movie I ever made was in high school. I was a senior in high school, and somebody had a camera in the dorm. I went to a boarding school, and I shot a movie, and I didn't realize it was my calling until about 2009. And that's when I really got into the film industry, and I was like, you know, producing projects and writing projects. And I would say, since I've been eating like this, I've been having, I don't know if wherewithal is the right word. I just like using it, but I've had the desire and the energy and the focus to write. And I finished my first ever feature length screenplay.
Wow.
I'm so accomplished. You ever get so accomplished, you get lazy? That's kind of what, yeah. Cause I've just been like, yeah, but I've not been lazy. I've been doing other things. Like I've been creating content for my movie channel. I have a movie channel where I do reactions and commentary to movie, and I've been doing like a horror movie binge. And
nice.
So I almost did Paranormal Activity today, but like horror movies take a lot out of me. So I had to like, and then I was like, well, I got a call with Carrie, so let me just see how I'm gonna feel after the call. But now I have a horror screenplay that I'm working on, and horror has never really been my genre. I'm more of a thriller, action, comedy. That's more me. But I have a horror short. It's about 6 pages. And right now I'm on this website called Studio Binder, trying to like set it up. I just spoke to like my producer, and we're trying to like really get this on the road. I guess I'm technically I'm in pre-production right now. So. Which means I'm going through the script, I'm setting up a shot list, and then after I set the shot list up, we're going to keep it in one location, which is going to be my house, and figure out the logistics in terms of food, because that's all I can offer anybody. I don't have money to pay somebody to act for now.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm doing that. And I think what I might do is create a pitch deck for this movie and see if I can raise some kind of money, because money always helps with these things. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because it's one thing to find somebody who's eager enough to be in a project, but then somebody who's not only eager enough to be in a project, but also willing to give me quality time.
Right.
And so, I find that when you have money involved, you can be like, hey, I'm paying you to be here, so I need you to not be on your phone while we're shooting.
And, yeah.
You know, things like that. The project not only represents me, but it also represents you. And yeah, and people can see it if you're not putting your all into something. So
that's cool.
So it's made me more focused on detail, paying attention to detail.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. That's awesome, man. I so many people I talk to that do carnivore have a similar stories. Like, they got this newfound energy. They're doing more work or whatever they're working on. They're able to put more into it because they're thinking clearer. They have more energy. It's pretty cool. But that's awesome with the movie stuff. I've always loved movies. My wife and I bought our small town movie theater, which people are like, oh, Mr. Fancy with the movie theater. It's a huge blessing, but it's just a single screen theater in a small town. We have one movie a week. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But doing this documentary, I've always wanted to do a movie. And that's maybe how this whole documentary came. I never thought it would have been a documentary, though. It was going to be more of just like a regular feature sort of thing.
Dude, you ever thought about hosting a film festival?
I'd do it in a second. I thought about it. I don't know how to do it or where I'd have the time, but I would do it in a second. I used to live in Beloit, Wisconsin, and they had a huge, it was called BIFF, Beloit International Film Festival, mm-hmm. that took over the whole town there. And I'd love to. I would absolutely.
Where are you now?
I'm in Montello, which is about an hour north of Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, dude. I mean, heck, so what I'll do on my end, I'll look and see what it takes to do something like that. And hell, I would love to, you know, screen some of my work there. And then definitely you screen your documentary there and stuff like
that. Yeah.
And
oh, man, 100% open invite. I'm definitely screening the documentary here, and I'm hoping, like, I really fell in love with this movie theater and the running an independent theater. It's like, there's no money in it. It's a passion project. When we did it, we're like, we're going to be lucky to break even, but we love movies and it's part of the community and it'll kind of be a fun project sort of thing. But I want to support other small town movie theaters. So I'm hoping to show the documentary and focus on other single screen theaters around the country, because a lot of them are struggling. And when we do these carnivore meetups, we just had one here with Dr. Kiltz like 2 weeks ago, and it sold all the seats sold out. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, this is better than a movie. So it's kind of good business. So I'm hoping to do inspiring carnivore story meetups at small town movie theaters all around the country, where we do a meetup and then maybe we premiere the documentary or another film or something like that. But
so when you screen a movie, is it digital or is it actual film?
Yeah, great question. It's all digital now. So okay. Like at our theater, we're playing all the newest movies.
Right now we got
it kind of sucked. It's unfortunate, but Joker 2, but it's all digital.
Garbage, yeah.
I think it was like 15 years ago, the whole industry switched from film to digital.
Oh, man.
And our theater, luckily, a whole bunch of these single screen theaters went bankrupt. They couldn't afford to buy a projector. Our projector here, this was the previous owner, took care of all of this. They did a big fundraiser with the city and the community got behind it. But I think it was like $40,000 or $50,000 for the digital projector.
Wow.
So we're all digital now, but man, Dave, you love movies. It'd be awesome to have you here and give you a tour sometime.
I need to make it out there. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
We got all the history. I have the old digital projector. We got a carbon arc projector. You go in our projector room and it's like traveling back in time. We got all the old film and trailers. It's like a museum. It's really cool.
Dude, that's amazing, man. That is
amazing. And the film, the film projector we have in the projector room, it still works. The only reason it's sitting there is because they had to switch to digital. It didn't break. And it was too heavy to get down the steps, so they left it up there, which I'm so happy they did because it still works. I was talking to the old projectionist. I'm like, man, we got to get in here sometime and fire up this film projector and play a film movie. Like, there's an actual spot for it and everything.
What? So. You know, there's actually a recent release that's on film. Twisters.
Oh, really?
That shot on film, yeah.
Oh, nice. We played the digital version of that when it came out. We ran that movie for 3 weeks. That was a really popular one this summer.
No, I mean, like, they shot it, like, on production. They shot it on film, like, on set.
Right. Yeah, so you have the option.
I'm sure it's released digitally, but yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, that'd be cool to get on the regular film. But one of the cool things is we have – so right now we get a little hard disk with the new movie. Like Joker 2 came on a hard disk, and then I got to load it to the projector. So it's all digital.
So it's like a DVD?
It's like a hard drive. It's a box. Oh, it's like this big.
They send it to you like that?
Yep. And then they send a separate thing. I got to do it on a thumb drive. It's like an encryption code, so you don't steal it or bootleg it or anything like that. So it's really, they're really strict about it. It's like impossible because the hard drive it comes on is just works on our projectors. I couldn't hook it up to a computer.
Yeah.
But the old, when they did film, they were still really strict about it. Like they would send you the film on Thursday. You'd play the movie Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then you had to ship all that film back. If they didn't get their film back, you were in big trouble because they're scared that you're continuing to play their movie over and over again kind of thing. But interestingly, we have probably 100 reels of old movies. I don't know how. Like it's like way against the rules because they were so strict about it. Some of them might have been like it was damaged or something, but I started going through in the projector room just like looking in a magnifying glass in the light like, ooh, what do we – maybe we got some classic movie here or something on film still. Yeah. The first one I looked at was – I'm like, maybe this is Gone with the Wind or something cool.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was the movie There's Something About Mary with Ben Stiller.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a funny movie. Not a classic like I was thinking, but that was one – must have been one of the ones before they switched to digital, one of the last ones. So
I acted in a movie with the director of that film.
Oh, really?
Jay Roach. He directed this movie I was in called All the Way with Bryan Cranston.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome.
And Anthony Mackie. Yeah, Something About Mary. I remember that movie. That was classic.
I love Bryan Cranston too. He's a good actor.
The first movie he was ever in was a Spielberg movie with Christian Bale, Ben Stiller, called Empire of the Sun. I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, that must be an old one.
Yeah, in the '80s, because Christian Bale was a little kid.
Wow.
And, he's like, "Hey, kid, you want a Snickers bar?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "So do I." And then, that's a classic movie.
Nice. Do you have like favorite directors where it's like they launch a movie, you're going to see it every single time?
I'm bad at doing that but. So Tarantino is as cream of the crop top guy,
Yeah.
I really like Michael Mann. Almost anything he puts out. I like Kathryn Bigelow. I love Kathryn Bigelow. Yeah.
She did Hurt Locker, I think she won an Oscar for.
Yeah, she also did Point Break.
Yeah, the original back in the day.
There's another one.
Yeah, they did a remake. Unfortunately, they did a couple years ago.
You know what the remake is, right?
It's just
Fast and the Furious,
right?
The same movie. I didn't know they did the remake like with the beach and all that other stuff. That's ridiculous. They need to leave that alone, man.
That's been one of my biggest pet peeves owning the movie theater is there used to be there's still good movies every now and then, but now it's so many sequels, the third one, the fourth one, the fifth one. It's like.
So I just watched Trap, the new M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yep.
I'm going to ruin it for you. It's bad.
I saw it.
So you know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know if you liked it or not. Well, I don't know. What did you think about it?
I did not like it. I didn't hate it. I didn't completely hate it, but it was
tepid.
It was an interesting concept that I think he could have done way better.
The premise was great, but it wasn't executed well, and I felt there was a little some overacting on Josh Hartnett's part. He just seemed a little awkward.
Yep.
And I think it might have been because it's been like over a decade since he's been in anything. So he's.
Like, I know. I was like, "Where's this guy been? I didn't even know he's still around."
Yeah, and then the fact that the girl, the pop star, the way she went about trying to expose them was just kind of like lazy to me.
Yeah, like, there were a couple things in there. That's what I said. I saw it with my daughter. I'm like, this was just like, what? They just like cobbled it together at the end. There was a bunch of laziness in there. Did you know the pop singer in there was M. Night Shyamalan's daughter? So,
okay.
There's a lot of controversy. Like, dude just did this movie to promote his daughter because she's a singer in real life. So
she's not a good actress.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, just objectively, I was like, this is really awkward. I think she's really pretty, but she's not a good actress. Like,
right.
And it was just kind of like, and I think the problem with it is that like, there's this like, I feel there's this like daddy's little girl thing. I think you mentioned it. And because when you're directing people, you're working, you're not friends, you're not family, you're working. There's a work that has to be done.
Right.
And I don't know if her acting is bad because she's just not good or that's his girl and he really didn't want to really get it out of her the way directors get performances out of actors.
Right.
You know, so yeah, because I don't know. But also she wasn't given much to work with the lines and what she had to do.
Right. Yeah.
Cause she,
it almost seems like they kind of, like he was like, how can I promote my daughter? And then built a movie around that premise of his daughter's going to be there singing in front of her. And then how do we do it? It almost seems like it reverse engineered it that way. He's interesting though. Cause man, he's had some really, really good movies and then just some really horrible ones. It's been kind of all over the board.
I just watched Signs today.
Yeah.
And The Sixth Sense. I mean, and what else did he do
The Village?
Unbreakable? The Village.
Unbreakable. Yep.
I haven't seen The Village. I need to check that out.
Oh, check that one out. That one's kind of crazy too.
Paul Giamatti?
I think so. Yeah, okay. I think so with The Village.
Okay, I need to check.
But Unbreakable, that was another one I recently rewatched. I'm like, the train crash scene in the beginning, and you're like, whoa, this one dude walks away.
Yeah, it was. I remember seeing that a long time. That's with Samuel L. Jackson, and I think they did a sequel to it called Glass.
Yeah,
or spinoff.
Yeah, I think he did a couple, and then I saw some interview where he was saying that was always the intention, was it was going to be like four movies or something. Cause I think there was Glass and then Split, I think, was another one.
Split, okay, yeah. I still haven't seen those, but I know that that's part of the...
Have you seen anything recently? New?
Any recent movies?
Yeah, like in the theater?
Oh, the last one I saw was Twisters.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's one I saw... And we're going to be playing it here this weekend, is Speak No Evil. Have you seen any trailers for that one?
No. No, I want to, though. Like, is that a horror film?
I think they classify it as a horror, but in my opinion, it's more of a thriller, like a psychological thriller horror. I highly recommend it. I saw it. I rarely do this because we own the theater. They won't let us preview the movies. And I'm like, I want to preview this before I put it in my own theater and people come watch it.
That would make more sense. Yeah, because you know your audience.
You think they would let me because I have to have all these licenses with the studios. But so my wife and I on like Mondays, we'll go to the theater. So I think this was like a month ago. We went to see this one and I was like, wow, that was a surprise. Like that was a good movie. And then I ended up seeing it again with my older daughter who just loves going to movies and there was nothing else playing. I'm like, I'll see it again. You haven't seen it. And now we're going to end up playing it here. But I thought it was really good. You look at the previews, you feel like, oh, this is going to be one of these jump scare horrors, but it was more of a psychological thriller kind of movie. So it's
kind of like the Babadook. I just saw that one.
Recently. Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. It's actually not bad. And I watched it because I watched the Scream movie and they mentioned the Babadook in Scream 4 or 5.
Right.
Scream 5, they mentioned the Babadook. Because, you know, I've been going through the Scream franchise. I'm on Scream 2 right now. And that was such a bad one. I don't know if you've seen it or remember it.
But, I think I might have seen it, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it's you know, Neve Campbell, Timothy Olyphant, Jerry O'Connell, who else is in there? Dave Arquette, like he was in the first one, but like, dude, it was one of those, you know, those like, and I'm not crapping on Lifetime because they make some good movies, but you know how you'll get that one Lifetime movie, it's like drama and dark, but you end up like doing something else instead of watching it.
Yep.
That's kind of what it was. That's kind of what it was like. I'm like, okay, when is this going to end? Like, this is not good. And it wasn't, and it didn't keep me on edge and like scared and stuff. I was like, this is not like the first Scream did its job. And that's a classic movie altogether.
Right.
And then I watched The Terrifier. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
I haven't. And you know, I think it's The Terrifier 2 just came out.
Three.
And, oh, is it three? Okay. I haven't seen any of those. I was tempted to see the third one because my wife and I were going to the theater and it was like the big one that they were promoting the most sort of thing. Was it so good?
So I can tell you now that it's really dark and it's like I don't even know how to explain it, but so with Scream, there's redemption, right?
Right.
So there is. You mind if I just tell you the end of this, or you want me to?
No, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so the first one is the people in it are insanely stupid. Like it's like a trope that's so old, where. You know, somebody's trying to, it's like, hey, man, somebody's coming after me. The other person's like, hey, man, you're crazy. Get away from me. You're crazy. I'm going to call the cops. He's like, please call the cops. He's like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but like where the help is like right there. Like, yes, go get the help. But the person's not willing to do it.
Right.
You know, like, oh, you know, you're crazy. Like where if a kid sees a ghost, but only the kid sees it when he's alone. And a ghost disappears when a parent shows up. It's almost like that annoying thing where you kind of want him to get caught and see where it goes from there. But it's like he keeps getting away with stuff. And it's ridiculous. And what I think is so what annoys me so much is that the protagonists, they make you basically get attached to her and then they just kill her off.
Nah.
She's in it like a good first three quarters of the movie, you know, and then they kill her. I'm like, that's so stupid.
Right.
But her sister ends up being the one that survives. And even when she survives, she's completely maimed.
Hmm.
And I'm like, this is, and I mean, yeah, I'm just like, this is stupid. I say it's just torture porn. You thought Saw was bad, but at least Saw had twist and stuff. But this one, it's just a clown killing people, and a clown that goes around killing people and wins. He wins all the time.
That's one thing I've learned watching movies, and one thing I'm doing differently with our documentary. Not to tie this back in, but so many movies I've seen over the last couple of years, some of them are good. But the ones that suck that I don't like, I always come to the conclusion that I just didn't have any emotional or connection with the character. Or like you said, in that case, they killed the character off. But a lot of movies lately, it's just like, I just don't care. Like, why am I going to continue watching this? I don't care. They don't like establish a good connection or something where you like the character. Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah. And cause there's an old method called save the cat, which is with screenwriting. And it's something that the protagonist does that makes you care about him throughout the rest of the movie.
Right.
So an example would be, have you seen Serpico?
Oh, I think so. A long time ago.
Yeah. Al Pacino movie. So it starts out with him, at like a shakedown and he's about to like, you know, shake down like a drug dealer or whatever. And, this guy who's there for the drugs comes there with his son, and Serpico's there to catch him, But since he has his son there, he's like, he flashes his badge and says, I'll catch you later. And so you're like, oh, he's a good dude. We care about him.
Right.
And so that's kind of like a save the cat moment, you know?
Nice.
And so when movies don't do this anymore, but it's so important to kind of have that element in a movie for the protagonist so that we, you know, we can follow them, you know, we can, you know, do, you know, like we like this person, but, and I think they missed that with the movie Unhinged with Russell Crowe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So with that movie, the main character, Karen Pistorius, from the beginning, you don't like her. And what's funny is that she is kind of a Karen in the middle of the movie, in the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
You know, but the retribution that she gets is not worth it. You know, so there is an arc that does happen with her where she basically, at the beginning, she's like late she gets fired because she's late. She doesn't take things seriously. And, she ends up like honking the horn, really like rudely at Russell Crowe's character, who's already unhinged. And he decides to teach her a lesson. And but they didn't do a save the cat moment with that movie. You're like, like, I'm not really invested in her. She's kind of a bitch. And I'm like, you know,
right.
So we need to care about her, you know, and that's super important, you know, and I think that's what's missing a lot. And so.
A lot of movies lately. I'm like, what? I just don't care. That's one thing. I never heard that term before, so I appreciate that. That's one thing we did unintentionally or intentionally with our documentary is saving too many cats. There's a lot when you start watching ours and you see Bill Nod in Alaska, 700 pounds stuck in his house, crying on camera. Like, I've been stuck in my house for 5 years. It's like, how can you not, like, you just fall in love with this guy and you want to see him succeed sort of thing. And then it's like, well, we'll be back a year later to see how Bill does a year later sort of thing. So,
right.
We're kind of going overboard on it a little bit, but it's just I think it's different with our documentary because this is like real life. We're not even manufacturing this. These are real people.
It's not narrative. Yeah, this is real life. I mean, so I think it works because you have this you know, the protagonist, and you know, to say the cat moment is he wants to do something good and love himself and do something good for himself. After all the bad that he's done for himself, after all the negative, you know, because so
Dave, you just nailed it. He even said that. He said, maybe I'm 700 pounds and maybe I did all of this suffering so that I could redeem myself and be an inspiration for other people. He started a YouTube channel since then. So it's like, how can you not fall in love with that kind of thing? So, but
yeah, it absolutely makes sense. So, have you seen Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dying?
Is that the juicing one?
Yeah, the juicing documentary.
Yeah, so. That messed me up, man. I bought a juicer after that. I started trying it. You know how many juicers sold from that stupid documentary? Oh, my goodness. It was so convincing, too.
Dude, so, on a technical aspect, it's a good documentary. But what it's talking about, I of course, I don't agree with it anymore because – that's like one of the most unhealthiest things you can do for yourself.
Yeah.
Because all the phosphorus and then all the sugar content. Anyways, but like we cared about him.
Right.
You know,
we could relate. We're all struggling with our weight. We could relate. Yep.
And I think what really drove me was how committed he was to doing what he did. You know, he was committed to drinking the juice instead of like eating when he wanted to eat. And I'm sure you know exactly what it's like when you juice, you get super hungry.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm just like, oh man. And I love a good challenge. So I did the same thing.
I got to ask my wife. I wasn't doing YouTube back then, but I think we took a picture of it. Like our whole counter, it was just full of all of this fruit and produce and all this stuff. We're going to do this. This is going to work. And it's so bad for you because you're eating fruit out of season, which is really, I've learned that lately. That's so bad for you when you're eating fructose out of season. But then like even if you just eat an apple, that's like a big ball of sugar as it is. But then you juice it. Now you're eating like 10 big balls of sugar. And
not
one
even
sitting.
Not
like
even eating the fiber, which slows down the sugar absorption. But
Yeah, you get rid of the fiber, just mainline that fructose and sugar right into your body. It's just crazy.
It's insane. It is insane. And you know what's crazy, dude, is like how much you'll placate something that's not working for you because of how bad you want the healing. And that's kind of where it was. Like, I spent so long doing the vegan plant-based thing and having the community and things like that. And I think what weighed so heavy on me is it became so political.
Right.
You know, like veganism is so political, but eating this way is not political because people from all different political sides kind of come to this diet because it really works.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not. And I think what's great is that I've learned to not judge people who's not eating the way I eat. Cause I used to be like that. I used to be like, dude, you know, if you eat meat, you know, like I used to be like that. And I'm glad that I'm not like that. And I was never really a vegan because I wore and owned leather.
Right.
You know, because I didn't know I was plant-based. I wasn't vegan. I didn't know the distinction, you know? And now I'm just like, dude, this is nonsense, man. Like this is the way we've been eating for years.
Yep.
We've been eating meat for years. And
that was my big thing was because I tried so many diets, including the juicing one that you just mentioned. And all of those, including the juicing one, it's like you said, I was starving. I was so hungry all the time on that juicing stuff. Every diet that I've ever done until I found carnivore was forced. It felt unsustainable. It felt unnatural. It felt like I just got to get through this. I just got to do it till I drop 20 pounds or 30 pounds and I'll go back to moderation. But this is the only thing I've ever done where I'm like, I eat a big fatty piece of meat and I'm full and I'm full of energy and I'm feeling good. And it doesn't feel manufactured or forced like those other ones did.
And moderation doesn't work for guys like us, dude. You know,
right.
We're kind of like all or nothing at all kind of people, you know, just cause, cause I, you know, if I go ahead and like do like Papa John's, it's over, dude.
Yep.
Completely over. Yep. So
that's a big distinction too. Like I resonate more, you know, like Dr. Barry, he lost a good deal of weight. So I think he's similar to you and I. We're like, I can't moderate, but then you have some of these other doctors like Paul Saladino. I'm like, that dude was never fat, never 100 pounds heavier like I was. Like, he never had that much. So it's a different – everyone's different. It goes to show everyone's different. But some people, I think – some of the people that advocate for eating in moderation are oftentimes, I find, ones that weren't way overweight like us or that maybe they could do it, but there's no way. I can't do it. I've tried it over and over and over again.
And then some people use the term moderation just to go back to their old habits.
Yep.
You know, and so like I have a friend now, they claim they keep gaining weight on carnivore and they love cheese. And I was like, I think that's it. That's what's really doing it. Because you can overdo it with dairy easily.
Oh yeah.
Easily, yeah. And because it's meant to fatten up calves. That's the purpose of his existence is to fatten up the baby. So yeah, you're gonna get fat if you're eating like all this cheese and milk and cream and stuff like that. So but also even if you don't do it, you're probably gonna gain weight too. But it's good weight. It's muscle weight. It's not it's not a fat weight.
Right.
And so I think the toughest thing, and this is for anybody who's listening, if you're eating this to lose weight, the worst thing to do is get on the scale. That's not the way you're going to determine it. Is you have to see how your clothes fit, measure yourself. Carrie, this shirt right here, like I used to have my Dunlap was way out. You know, Ken Barry uses that term Dunlap.
Yep.
Like if I stand up, you would have been able to see my belly hang out from under the shirt. Now my shirt drapes down over, and like, dude, I feel sexy wearing a shirt, man. I feel like I should be in a Folgers Crystals commercial. You know, so it's just like, dude, this is like it feels so good. And I'm sure you said you lost 100 pounds. That is phenomenal. And like, have you always been overweight, or is this like, or is being thin a new thing?
Being thin is a new thing. I have always been overweight, but I experimented with keto. So I tell people, and I believe this is the truth, I think I hold the world record for losing weight if you include gaining it and losing it and gaining it and losing it. I went up and down and up and down for so many years. I do keto diet. I dropped 60 pounds once before, and I'm like, never gaining it back. And then I gained it all back, and then like another 50 pounds. And so this is by far the furthest I've ever gone. I'm like 600 days on carnivore now, so there's no turning back. But
yeah, you're pretty much like sold on this, man. That's amazing. Yeah, because I want to get to the point where I have a flat stomach, which I've never had in my life.
I don't know if I'm even going to get there. That's one thing. I got like some loose skin, and it's just kind of hanging there. So we'll see. They say it'll tighten up over time.
It'll tighten up. Yeah. Because especially if you're eating this way, you know, I feel this way, it'll help tighten up. And
yep.
And yeah, no, absolutely. I feel that's going to be the case.
Yeah, man, you're looking great too. I'm not just, I saw you, I was like, whoa, man, since the last time I saw you. And I think it was just a couple months ago we did that last video together. You dropped a bunch of weight since last time. You're absolutely right about the scale too. I tell people that's the biggest advice. Measure, measure, measure. And I didn't do it either myself. I wish I would have, but my wife is saying the same thing now. Like all of her clothes, they're just like falling off of her. So you can lose inches, gain muscle, and it's not going to reflect on the scale. And the water weight changes a lot, so the scale can be discouraging. But
yeah,
definitely measure. So
no, I'm it's tough because you know I get weighed 4 times a week in dialysis. That's kind of how they determine how much fluid to take off of my body.
Right.
And so, but yeah, I like last week, I was at 114.5, and now I'm back up to 115 something. So, and I'm not like really getting discouraged. I just know that it's going to fluctuate. But earlier this year, I was like 128, 129, damn near 130, which is almost 300 pounds. And so I'm doing way better now. Now I'm trying to get the kilos. The when I say 130 and stuff like
that. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And so now I'm trying to get back. I'm trying to get down to about maybe 100, under 105 kilos. So if I can get down to 100 kilos, 104 kilos, that would be great. That'll keep me. That'll be, put me under 220. So that'll be
nice.
That'll be a good weight. And because there's clothes in here that I haven't put on in years. There's brand new clothes in here that I've never been able to put on.
That's awesome. That's a good goal to have. You're gonna do it, no problem, man. You're on track. That's great.
Oh yeah, I'm killing it. And I think what's funny, because we're doing a transplant thing. So my mom has I have a bag here with clothes to take with me, in case that one of the hospitals calls and tell me that they have a kidney ready.
Wow.
And she's been buying like shorts and just putting them in that bag. And a lot of these shorts haven't been fitting. They've just been like really small. So I don't know if she's doing this on purpose, but I think it's just funny. You know, she's like, you can make it. She's got these like these really thin. And it's funny because I naturally have a very small waist. So that's probably why she did that. But
nice.
but it's giving me something to work towards. I'm like, all right, let me get down here. Let me get this weight off. And I know I'm going to feel better. The doctors even say that the recovery is going to be way better if I lose weight and stuff. And they even suggested that I get, I think it's called endoscopy, where they staple your stomach or whatever. They put the lap band.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, I'm not doing that.
Don't need to.
Yeah. I was like, I'm eating this way. Yeah, this way will work for me, and I'm fine with that. I'm not I'm not going through unnecessary surgery because that's, yeah.
Keep it natural. That's awesome. Dave, this has been fun, man. I really enjoy talking to you. We got to do this more often.
Absolutely.
So I got to run to another call. I got it for sure. I didn't realize what time it was, but I want to shout out anyone that's watching, check out Dave's channel, Flesh and Fuel. I'll have a link in the description below. Anything else you want to mention or shout out before we wrap up?
Check out my other, if you want to watch me do commentary on to movies and jokes and stuff like that, check out my other channel called The Real Prescription, R-E-E-L Prescription, The Real Prescription.
Awesome. I'll put a link for that below also. So everyone go give Dave some love, subscribe. Appreciate you, Dave. You're doing great. I really had a fun time talking to you. We got to do this again.
Same. Have a good day, dude.
See you later. Bye.
Peace.